The content presented in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. It does not constitute financial advice, and listeners are encouraged to consult with qualified financial professionals before making any investment decisions. The views expressed on the show are that of the guests and the host and may not be the same views of LaSalle Street Securities or LaSalle Street Investment Advisors. Welcome to Investing with Integrity, the podcast dedicated to BRI, Biblically Responsible Investing. In each episode, we delve into the world of BRI, where we prioritize values over just financial gains. We believe true wealth encompasses the well-being of individuals, communities, and the world. Join us as we chat with industry experts, advisors, pastors, and more, sharing insights into BRI's core principles. We'll explore how companies are evaluated for ethical inclusion, ethical industries, and the impact of shareholder activism. Of course, BRI has its challenges, and we'll openly address them, offering tips on how to navigate these challenges while staying true to your values. Our goal is to empower you with resources to make informed, value-aligned investment decisions. If you want a portfolio that aligns your financial and moral goals, Investing with Integrity is your podcast. Let's discover how wisdom, principles, morals, and integrity can shape a purposeful approach to investing. Join us in exploring how faith-based values and finance can coexist harmoniously. So get ready for this transformative journey where we prioritize wisdom over worth, principles over profit, morals over money, and integrity over it all. With Integrity Podcast, my name is Jeff Tellerico. I am your host. Today we have Lauren Graham with us. And Lauren is a published author, CKA, CPA, and CFP, and has operated his own independent professional practice specializing in faith-based investing for over a decade. In past years, Lauren has been an invited guest speaker at the Kingdom Advisors National Conference, helping other advisors embrace faith-based investing. More recently, Lauren was a contributing teacher for the Faith-Driven Investing Core Curriculum video training now available to KA members. Lauren was also recognized by LPL Financial as a leader in the movement of faith-based investing. Having served as a founding chair for the advisor-led LPL Kingdom Advisors Large Firm Community Group from 2016 to 2018. Lauren's book, Investing with Integrity, How Investment Choices Can Be an Act of Worship, is currently in its second printing and has received endorsements from Randy Elkhorn, Ron Blue, and Howard Dayton, just to name a few. Lauren has also been active in his local community, having served on many nonprofit boards over the years. Lauren lives in Spokane, Washington, with his wife Ashley, three teenagers, one preteen, and their three cats. Lauren and Ashley are newly married in 2023 and are grateful for new beginnings. Now, in his free time, which with three teenagers, I don't know how he has any, he enjoys the great outdoors and flying as a licensed private pilot. Lauren, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here with us today.
Thanks, Jeff. It's an honor to be here and just hear you read that bio. It's humbling just to think how God has used me in just a small way, hopefully, for this movement of faith-based investing. But it's a privilege to be a guest on your show, and thanks for having me.
No problem at all, Lauren. I'm glad you were finally able to get some time in your schedule to be part of what we're doing, because it's all advancing the kingdom of God. So let's start off. I'm going to ask you something that is interesting about yourself that most people might not know.
Sure. Well, the last part of your introduction, a lot of people don't know that I'm a licensed private pilot. So it's something that has been a lifelong dream. I have memories flying with my dad as a little kid. And so I kind of got the bug from my dad and had some kind of a special sentimental value for me wanting to do that, but it was an accomplishment. I was able to earn my ticket as a pilot a couple years ago, and kind of a highlight kind of wrapped up in that pastime. But for his dad, he passed away last summer from cancer, but about a month and a half before he passed, we're able to arrange a special flight with him so that I could take my dad up, and that was really meaningful to me to be able to do that.
Cool. That's something that you'll remember forever. And it's a beautiful thing to have done something with your dad like that, that you grew up doing with him. So that's something that you'll remember that forever, Lauren. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So you and I actually first met at a, I believe it was Guidestone event in Dallas, Texas, probably 7-8 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool to, you know, now have you on the show, but to see you at the Kingdom Advisor conferences over the years, to have gotten your book, to have read your book, to understand what this faith-based investment movement really is all about. Coming from another advisor, more so than one of the houses that we do business with, you know, Timothy Plan, Eventide, those kind of things. So having another advisor on the show is going to be really good for us because it's going to give a different perspective. So tell us, you know, how did you get started in the financial services industry to begin with?
Yeah, sort of by accident. I was, you know, originally my career was on an accounting pathway as a CPA and working with a large public auditor firm, accounting firm. And one of my audit clients was a institutional investment house in the Los Angeles area. And honored to get an invitation to kind of become their controller. They needed some in-house accounting help, and you know, I was working with the CFO and doing my the accounting for him and everything. But then all the excitement, all the fun was happening in the securities, you know, the stock picker, stock picking, and the everything, and you know, that was where all the fun was. So I was able to get my securities licensing, and then when I moved to the Pacific Northwest, you know, was really praying, asking God, you know, how can I use this institutional knowledge that I have? There aren't a lot of big institutional firms in you know, Spokane, Washington, but I really felt that calling me to see how I could help individuals and families, you know, and take that skill set. So that was my big leap into launching a financial planning practice. And so essentially, you know, starting from zero and just, you know, trusting God would lead me along the way. So that was just over 16 years ago that I began that journey as a financial planner, and it's been neat to see, you know, just reflecting back on all that, you know, the lessons learned, and you know, we all, you know, you know, make some wrong turns, you know, along the way, but just how and God's graciousness, you know, here we are, and so it's such an honor to, you know, get to know these families and be a voice in their lives and just watch them go through milestones, and you know, sometimes good, sometimes bad. You know, we just have two clients that are where they have adult children that are facing terminal illnesses, and it's to be able just to pray together, cry together, it's just been you know, I just, you know, I thank God for that privilege to be just in that role. So
that's some of the greatest joy that I think we all can experience as a financial advisor, when we can actually be there for our clients, when we can hug their necks, when we can actually, like you said, cry with them. You know, I have really great relationships with my clients, and there's no doubt in my mind that you do as well. And it's being able to be that voice and that friend in trying to help explain what happens. I mean, God is still sovereign. He's still God, and his plan is something we don't know or understand fully. And when something like an adult child having a terminal illness happens, being there for them and being their pillar is just something that we have the privilege to do. So yeah. I commend you for that too, Lauren, and realizing that is part of what we do. It's not about money.
Right. It's not. Yeah. I was just this Sunday at church, the sermon was on expectations and on, you know, at Palm Sunday, you know, yesterday. And so, you know, how have the Israelites' expectations of Christ were as he was entering the city. You know, I think they didn't really see that coming. I think it was John 16 where the scripture that talks about Jesus said, you know, in this world there will be trials and sorrows, and so we face that, you know, in the markets about every, you know, 8 or 9 years. But you know, just be able to be there and try to speak timeless wisdom has been a neat journey. And it was only about a year, not even a year into my professional practice, and I was, you know, following the certified financial planning principles, everything, but it was just within the first really 6 months of the practice that I discovered Kingdom Advisors, and that there was a link on how to integrate faith with advice. And that was a game changer for me.
So you've been basically in this faith-driven movement, this biblically responsible investing type movement, for most of your career then?
June 2009 was when I, you know, at the time I called the, you know, qualified Kingdom Advisor, now a certified Kingdom Advisor, but I went to the, it was the last KA conference that they hosted in Atlanta in that 2009 timeframe. I think there were like 300 people at the conference. You know, I just got back from Florida where they were, I saw you there, you know, but we were among like 3,000 people there, you know, and just how it's grown is fantastic. But they were linking us to some of the investment houses that we rely upon, you know, to implement faith-based investing. You know, they had booths at that conference, and first time I'd ever heard of the idea that you could even and not only follow biblical financial planning principles, but also invest in a way that reflects faith and values. And so it was a complete paradigm shift. And I remember calling my best friend at the time. He was running his own hedge fund in New York, but we were high school and college friends at UCLA, and he, I remember calling him, and I said, you know, David, I just found my life passion. Like, this is it. This is what I need to be doing. And it's been a neat, you know, journey from there. But that was, a little while ago.
Pretty amazing story there. Now, you know, in your book, you start out right from the beginning in chapter one, talking about this three-story house. Can you explain that so our listeners, you know, I want them to go get your book, of course, but at least give them a teaser of to what that means and how that is implemented in your practice.
Yeah, you bet. I always, you know, and, you know, having kind of a Reformed theology background, you know, understanding that everything we do is sacred in life, you know, everything we do is an act of worship. And trying to understand how investing fits into the framework of our everyday faith-driven activities, or how we live, how we use money, and how we give money, and how we invest money, and so I was trying to come up with something, you know, clever, and, you know, that would make a good analogy. And I just remember thinking, okay, Christ is the foundation of everything. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, foundations are, you know, what you put a house on. So I was like, wait, and I kind of went from there. But the idea is, though, is that, you know, the first level of the house is our relationships, the greatest commandment, you know, to love the Lord our God and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And so that, and it doesn't, you know, God doesn't call us to judge our neighbor, to measure anybody, but to love, you know, how do we love our neighbor? And that's relationship. And that's, you know, in every area of life, you know, Christ modeled that for us, you know, the disciples. What, you know, the greatest love is this, that you lay down your life for your friends, you know, forgiveness and all that. And so, so we do the best we can to love our neighbor, forgive our neighbor, imperfectly, because we're human and we're fallen and we're gonna sin and we're gonna have to ask forgiveness. And it's you know, but it's the great thing about that foundation of Christ is that he did that work on the cross, and it's appropriate that this coming Sunday is we celebrate the resurrection Sunday, that work that he accomplished on the cross covers you know, our past, present, and future sins. That the work is done. There's nothing we can do to earn God's favor anymore, because he loves us already. And that because of Christ, we can have reconciliation relationship with our fathers. So that's an important acknowledgement, that it's imperfect, that, you know, we're doing the best we can. The Lord is with us and is walking with us, and he'll pick us up when we fall down, you know, and that's, but to love our neighbor and as ourselves, that's kind of the first story. And then the second story was, okay, because of what Christ has done on the cross, and because we have accepted him and are in relationship with him, how do we handle money differently in light of that? You know, of course, So the second story of the house was our outflow, how we give money, how we spend money, the types of businesses we choose to, you know, patronize, believe in, based on what they stand for and different things. So that's all the second story of the house. And then, but there's this, and that's where most people live. Like a lot of the biblical financial stewardship, educational materials and books out there are all kind of in this area. You know, how do you, you know, budget and your tithing and giving and spending and all that. So that's, and that's where all the, you know, we've all read, you know, a lot of materials in that area. The third story of the house was almost like kind of this attic, this extra story that was kind of discovered, that it's like, hey, wait, what about how we earn money and invest money? You know, if we're being, you know, and again, the spending isn't perfect, you know, like, everybody's going to blow the budget once in a while. And, oh, what about, you know, Lord, forgive me. How am I getting out of this, you know? But you know, we're faithful to the tithe. We're faithful to try to, you know, live responsibly as good stewards, you know, within our means, spending less than we earn, as Ron Blue would say. Then that's an expression of worship. It's not to earn God's favor or a gold star, but it's an expression of worship, you know, because, and so the third story of the house is about how we earn money, and that's where the investments come in. But just like relationships and spending is going to be an imperfect process, you know, investing is, it's the heart behind it that's important, and God sees our heart, and that's what's important. So in earnest, you know, if we're trying to honor him in every area of life, you know, going back to that, everything is sacred, then that kind of completes the construction, if you will.
I like the word that you chose to reference all three of these stories. You called it stewarding relationships, stewarding resources, stewarding how we earn money.
Sure.
Because stewarding is exactly what we're supposed to be doing. How do we steward these treasures that God has allowed us to have here? And it's a great part of the Christian journey and the Christian story. You know, one of the things you mentioned is it's the heart behind it. So this is where a lot of times in the BRI space, in the faith-based space, we have seen brothers in arms battle on what's the heart say? What does God really say about this? So we have some screens that are just negative screens everything in the world out. And then we have some that only screen out certain things. So you talk about this in your book in what was the chapter called? Defining What is Good.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, you gave a pretty good idea of the screening process that you guys use, and I'm assuming you're still using that. So how does that look for you? How do you play that off when you have a client that says, no, I really, really, really want to own this stock or this company?
Yeah. So I really appreciate how, you know, the different investment, you know, managers have their own unique screening process, and some companies, you know, put more emphasis on some screens than others. One fun family that comes to mind is just really lasered in on the abortion screen and sanctity of life screen, that they will not own any companies that, of course, manufacture the abortifacients, but also really dig deep on the Planned Parenthood donations and try to avoid companies that are, you know, using corporate shareholder dollars for those nonprofit donations that really are, you know, pretty controversial, and that's at best. So some funds are really great at that. Others are really great at the, you know, the impact screens on how to not just avoid companies, but actually leverage and lean into these companies and get enough capital behind them that they actually can earn the right to sit down across the table from the CEO or from the board and say, hey, these are the concerns that we have. You have a great product. You have a great company. You know, why are you donating to Planned Parenthood? Can we please stop that? You know, and they listen, you know, they'll listen. And so they've had great success with that. So there's two totally different approaches. You know, one is, you know, avoidance, the negative screen. The other is a kind of positive affecting change, you know, strategy. And then I like kind of the a third component, which is not just the company's product or service, but it's their relationship in the ecosystem that they live. You know, so it's looking at, okay, are these companies also dealing ethically with their employees, their customers, their supply chains? Are they stewarding the environment, you know, in a way that's not leaving, you know, a wake of destruction, you know, in their path, and they're actually stewarding their resources in ways that are reflective of biblical values also. So I love, so all these different companies together, yeah, if, you know, if I was really taking it, you know, this is more important, instead of weighing one over the other, I just kind of take them all together and say, this is sort of the mosaic, the stained glass window mosaic, you know, that represents the church, you know, and different ways of doing things. But in the end, it's the heart of it is all good, that it's all trying to honor God with how they approach investing. And so we're uncomfortable with those differences.
Good. That's, you know, I think we're a lot on the same page with this. We know these companies. We've dealt with these companies. We've, you know, broke bread with these companies, and understanding why their money managers do what they do and how they do it is easy for us to then turn around and explain to clients. So let's change gears for a second here, and let's talk about performance, because that seems to always be one that our guests like to talk about. So how do these proponents of biblically responsible investing or faith-based investing reconcile the tension sometimes that happens between a client's misunderstanding, if you will, of performance when they break down a fund into something so specific?
Yeah, so performance is, you know, it's part of good stewardship. We wanna aim for the best returns we can, you know, for each client's level of risk tolerance and needs and objectives, but at the same time, do so in a way that's honoring God and part of our act of worship. So it's definitely important. We can't just ignore performance. You know, I do, and you know, our clients, they don't ignore it either. So we have to. what I found is, and I still, you know, I hold this philosophy, and it's borrowed from actually Sir John Templeton, who originally, I think, formed this thought that, and there's a lot of logic to it. It makes a lot of sense that if a company has a great product or service, and they're meeting a real need in the world, and they're doing it well with integrity and ethics, they're treating their employees ethically, their customers ethically, and you know, doing things the right way for the right reason, that ultimately those companies will be more profitable than companies that are just narrow-minded on you know, short-term profits and cutting corners to try to make numbers look better and everything. So I do believe that philosophy, that the adding these faith-based considerations actually enhances the potential for return rather than being a source of drag, you know, that's holding it back. I actually believe that the portfolios would do better long-term because of the focus. That being said, you know, when we're tied to, you know, passive benchmarks, there's going to be this yin and yang, you know, where sometimes, you know, the faith-based portfolios look better, and sometimes, you know, the secular benchmarks can look better. And but the key is, you know, over the long term, you know, over the 5-year, 10-year, 20-year averages, and it's exciting that we actually are not that far away from having 20-year averages in the space. I'm confident that you know, a lot of the differences just kind of smooth out over time. But and a lot of focus this last, you know, quarter on the Magnificent Seven and how tech is just, you know, pulling the whole market. And so just reminding clients that, yeah, we're going to be diversified, and, you know, the understanding how the S&P is built and how just a few handful of companies can be almost a third of the entire performance. You know, that's, you know, not always going to be the case, but that's just the weird place that the market is right now. So I'm having to have a few conversations to help people understand, you know, if they're not in some of those big tech names because of the faith screens, that may look ineffective now, but, you know, over time, you know, the market tends to get ahead of itself and overexcited about things. So
It everything kind of comes back into everything eventually comes back into balance. So right now, the you know, it's a little out of balance. But.
You know, it's pretty amazing that we both deal with some high net worth clients, and they don't even understand sometimes what is in the Dow Jones. They don't realize it's only 30 stocks, and here we are living and breathing and dying and by what the Dow does on a daily basis. You know, the stock market drops 600 points, and all of a sudden everyone thinks that the world's crashing down, and it's not. It's 30 stocks. It's not representative of everything. So it's interesting that you said that about the S&P, and I'm glad you did, because it is so unbalanced from what it really started as being.
Oh, we have these benchmarks, you know, because you have to measure something, but I think it really plays on that FOMO, you know, fear of missing out mentality. And so I find it's helpful to kind of try to refocus the client's perspective or attention on not just comparing, because, you know, I will have some things to say about that, so it's not good to compare that. Just to focus on, okay, this is what the Lord's entrusted to you. Why are we investing in the first place? It's because you're trying to steward what He's entrusted to you, accomplish family goals, use money as a tool for God-given purposes to teach, educate, and prepare the next generation for stewardship, and really trying to ask the question, okay, this is the path that we're on, and we can earn a respectable return for the risk without taking too much risk and accomplish all these goals, and they can't spend it all during their lifetime, and they can't take it with them. So in the end, it's going to go on to the next generation, or to hopefully, you know, fund kingdom causes, and just kind of point them back to what's the purpose of all this in the first place. It's not a horse race. It's a finish line. You know,
that brings us to Ron Blue's famous quote: "How much is enough, and what are you going to do with the rest?"
Right. That's right. So
let's talk about you. You own your company. You've been in business now for almost two decades at this point, correct?
Yes. We're in our 17th year,
how is it that you get to bring your faith to work every day, and you find joy and satisfaction in that? And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I do. I remember early on, actually, just right after I basically committed to moving down the road of faith-based investing and rebranding and really just putting a stake in the ground, this is what we're all about. I remember getting a call out of the blue, invitation to lunch, and it was with a big warehouse and a friend that I'd gotten to know and a mentor in some ways, and had offered me basically like a junior partner in a billion-dollar practice, but these were mostly institutional clients, and you're gonna have to not spend, you know, time in the biblically responsible investing area. That's, you know, you have to step away from that, because that's not what this is, this practice is about. And I almost felt like I was like being invited up on top, and, you know, this all up in the years at the end, if you just walk away. And I prayed about it, wrestled with it. Cause at the time I was, you know, just struggling to get the practice off the ground and racing being this diet and just trying to, you know, balance the books, you know, and I really prayed. I said, no, this is, and my friend that I call, you know, he's also my accountability partner, still is. We have a call every 2 weeks just to pray together and check in. But he reminded me of that excited call. I called him from the KA conference on the way to the airport. He said, this is your passion, your calling. What do you think God would want you to do? And I'm like, oh. So then I just kept moving forward and trusting God with the result, and He's been faithful to, like, you know, allow us to come this far. So and I'm still good friends with that advisor, and I think they're at $2 or $3 billion now, and that's okay, but it's been neat to see this journey that God had me on. So I trust Him completely. Every time I see that, you know, there's a tough market, or, you know, a global pandemic, for example, or things that, you know, all the rough patches in my life, I've seen evidence of God's presence, and He's definitely at work in the world and in His kingdom. So it's humbling to just that He allows us to be a part of it.
So let's change gears here first. Why do you think other CKA members, other Kingdom Advisor members, other advisors like us that have a hard time truly embracing BRI or faith-based investments?
I think it's maybe a little bit of fear of the unknown. I mean, I try to reflect back on what was holding me back, and it was the advice I got at the time that, you know, from several people that, well, there's not a large enough market to have a practice that's entirely dedicated to just faith-based, that you have to be broader and appeal to more people, and that, you know, there's not enough demand, you know, to be sustainable. I, you know, was in my faith journey, I just kind of, you know, decided to commit the practice to faith-based and burn the ships behind me, because I knew myself. I mean, I knew I might second guess myself or like, wait a minute, is this the right thing? So I said, nope, we're going all in. And but there is so much demand. The need is great, and the, you know, the workers are few, because at the end of the day, one financial advisor really only has capacity maybe to serve, you know, 200 households. I think the real number, the research, you know, says more like 150, I think, is the number, how our created our minds and our capacity for relationship is, you know, similar research for how many, you know, people can pastor, shepherd, you know, and still remember everybody's names. but I think, so, you know, I'm pretty certain there's at least 150 to 200 people out there that can't find a faith-based advisor that, and they would love to be for that. And so I found that that fear of not being able to be successful, or that the practice is going to wither and die, is, I think, you know, largely from the enemy, that he doesn't want us to take a step forward, because it can have a real impact in the economy and the world. You know, like another favorite quote of Ron Blues I like to say is, you know, he used to say all the time, you know, if you change Wall Street, you change the world. I really believe that. And so it's actually kind of started to happen, which is really neat. So
yeah, Mark Minella, I don't know if you know Mark with Faith Investor Services. He is starting this new campaign, and it's called Rescue 1T. He wants to start and just get $1 trillion out of the secular side of Wall Street and into the faith-based side of Wall Street. And I think that's a great initiative to start there.
Yeah, that's amazing. We're probably not that far from accomplishing that, I would trust, but it's so yeah, I think fears, you know, is part of it. And then just, you know, having to learn, you know, a new way of doing things, you know, for especially advisors that are on the kind of the sunset side of their career and getting ready to pass the torch. But I see a lot of excitement with the younger generation of advisors that just want to start that way from the get-go. And so I think and there's a tremendous opportunity. And, you know, I always said that clients, they come to us because they trust us for advice, but also, you know, there's that trust relationship. And so, you know, if we come to a client really excited about something and say, hey, I think this is really important, and, you know, are you willing to trust me on this and come with me on this? And I think, you know, they're going to pick up on that excitement and energy. And if we come to the client and say, you know, I'm really nervous about this, but I've been thinking a lot about this, and I'm not sure which way to go, but what do you think? You know, and they're going to be like, I don't know. You know,
if you don't like it, or you're not excited about it, I'm not going to be excited about it.
Right. And so I think it's just having that conviction and confidence, and then just trusting the Lord. I think advisors would find a lot more success in this conversation than you know, they might think.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we have this younger generation coming out that is phenomenal, and it all starts in the college campuses. I mean, you were just at Kingdom Advisors. We had almost 300 college kids there. that are at various institutions throughout this country learning the Kingdom Advisor approach to investing. And that's phenomenal. Liberty University is doing a great job. And there's many, many more out there that are doing it as well. So let's look at your crystal ball for a second. Where do you think the market's heading in the next 5 to 10, 15 years?
I threw my crystal ball away a long time ago, but I think people are trying to fish it out of the waste can. And, you know, I don't know where it's going to go, but, you know, if history is any guide, I was actually just looking at this the other day with the client, but in April of 2020, and that was, so this was before the recovery, right in the middle of the pandemic, you know, the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones were both down close to 50%. And everybody was, you know, it was just a very unique time in history. But I did this webinar with Eventide, and Jason presented, it was actually, I need to give credit to Jason Eventide for this analogy, but I love this analogy. There's a graph that was put up on the screen, and it was 150 years of stock data, history going back from 1870 to 2020. And you can see, you know, the line going, you know, back and forth, but, you know, slowly progressing upward. And then there was this yellow line that went right through it. And it wasn't like a scatterplot graph. Not perfect, but a very strong correlation that this was a very clear average. And that data was showing that the market has over that period of time averaged about 6.5% real return. So return minus inflation, which kind of jives with what we always expect. You know, the S&P is, you know, somewhere in that 9 to 10% average annual range, and inflation in the 3 to 3.5% range. But that was the history, 150 years. And you kind of, the zigzags that were kind of around the average line, Jason kind of painted this picture of, you know, imagine somebody walking their dog through Central Park, New York, and they're on a sidewalk path that's taking them across the park to their favorite coffee shop on the other end. But they're walking their dog, and the dog's on a long leash. And so the dog's like sniffing the flowers and running circles and zigzagging and, you know, all over the place. But the owner's just got that leash, and he's on his way to the coffee shop. And he, like, in the stock market, is kind of like the dog, you know, like all over the place, you know, but the average is like the owner, you know, walking the dog. And so the coined phrase was, you know, keep your eye on the owner, keep your eye on the owner, not dog, you know, keep your eye on the owner. But I love the kind of the double meaning there, you know, keep your eye on the owner, because ultimately, you know, God owns it all. And these are his monies, his investments. And so if we keep our eye on the owner, we're going to make much better decisions, you know, less anxiety. And so, you know, this phrase by heart, you know, the compliance phrase, you know, past performance is not a guarantee of future results.
Yeah, but love that.
150 years is a long time. And think about everything that's happened in that time. You know, it's post-Civil War reconstruction, World War One, World War Two, a Great Depression in there, every kind of possible calamity you can think of. And yet, you know, the free market capital system, it, you know, keeps marching forward. It's adaptable, you know, it survives and changes and grows to adapt to its environment. So I can't give you that crystal ball number. I have a lot of confidence in the free market system, and if we make decisions within that system guided by faith, I think and follow, you know, wisdom principles, I think God will honor that.
Absolutely. Well, I've had Jason on the show, so I'm very familiar with him. I love him. In fact, I think I offered that same webinar to our clients as well, and it was great.
Yeah.
Great show. So, all right, let's get down to the last couple questions here. If there were three people, dead or alive, that you could have a conversation with, who would they be and why? And you can't say Jesus.
Can't say Jesus. Interesting. Well, so three people. I think if I could have a conversation with, well, one would be Ulysses S. Grant, I think, the former U.S. president and general.
I would say him because I was really fascinated reading his biography by I think it's Isaac Wolterstein. I think he's the same. He wrote the biography for Steve Jobs and a few. But it was I remember I handed my book, my book, you know, to a client to read. Hey, I thought, you know, you'd like to read this. And so when I met him for coffee, the next time he brought that book. And if you've seen the book, it's like 1,000 pages. But so he was giving me back. But it was just a fascinating journey. You know, his leadership and navigating, you know, civil war issues, and he's very, very much ahead of his time, and was a proponent of actually civil rights in his day in the 1800s that unfortunately we didn't see come to fruition until the, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. years, and then you know, some are even now we're just kind of getting to where it was supposed to be. But I love this. His life story. I would love to sit down with him for a little bit. Abraham Lincoln is like also before in same area, I guess, but again, just on leadership and faith. And when everyone's against you, you know, how do you rise above all that? And in the short amount of time he was with us, on this earth, I should say. Third person. Maybe Martin Luther, actually. Another, you know, all these. Leaders that changed the whole mindset, you know, or changed the direction of the humanity, I guess. But that would be really neat to learn from him, I guess. So
those are three great people. I admire you for those. I mean, two definitely changed the course of our country, and then of course Martin Luther changed the course of Christianity as we know it today, I believe. So
absolutely,
those are great. All right, so the last question. What didn't I ask you that you're just dying to talk about?
Ooh. Well, let's see. We've covered a lot. I think, you know, one thing that we didn't touch on, but I think is important, and it's kind of the underpinning of faith-based investing, and that is, you know, investing has evolved so much. There are all these new ways to invest. You know, it used to be that you just invest in individual companies. Like, I won't mention the names, I guess, but, you know, like if you invested in a certain soda pop, you know, yeah, everybody, you know, the Coke versus Pepsi, you know, taste test, right? But, you know, you have this like connection with the company or the product if you use the product a lot. And, oh, I really like that product. But as investing has become in some ways more sophisticated and complex, we've lost that connection with the individual companies and the products. So whether it's, you know, through mutual funds or ETFs or these just passive indices where you just own the whole market, you know, and it's been or the technical analysis where it's investing is just charts and lines and graphs and trends and doesn't matter what the companies are anymore, I think. That disconnect has allowed companies to kind of get away with, you know, a lot of bad behavior. And so I think that my hope is that, you know, as faith-based investing really continues to grow and take off, that connection between the investor and the actual corporation becomes stronger and more transparent, that we come back to understand what is investing. You know, when you boil it down, it's investing in a company that makes real goods or real services that are trying to, you know, improve humanity in some way or contribute to human flourishing, is, you know, how one company says it, which I love. I think that'll go a long way for companies being more responsible. They're not citizens, but being responsible participants in community.
They'd be stewards.
Yeah.
Simple as that. So where can people get your book?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's also the publisher, Kingdom Life Publishing. So if you just search Kingdom Life Publishing has bulk order discounts too. It's meant to be an educational book directly to investors, and the call to action in the book is, you know, to
to pray about it, talk to your pastor if you're not sure, and talk to your financial advisor. So really, it supports existing relationships. You know, it's not an 800 call us, do whatever, you know, marketing. It's just, so other, there are actually quite a few advisors that use it in their practices, to help educate their clients. And it's not, you know, competitive with us, even though we have a practice in the Northwest, but, so I encourage, folks with clients or just wanting to understand it better. It's a great tool to, you know, to light read. It's not technical. So hopefully, you know, it'll make a dent in the universe that way.
For our listeners, I will put those links in the show notes so you can go directly to Amazon or to his publishing company and take a look at those books there. Lauren, thank you again for your time. I know that it's pressing and I really appreciate it. And I'm honored that you chose to be on our show today.
It's my pleasure, Jeff. Thank you for having me and blessings to you.
All right. God bless. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Investing with Integrity podcast with your host, Jeff Tellerico. Tune in on the first and third Wednesdays of every month to hear from other advisors, industry experts, pastors, and more as we discuss biblical thoughts about money and investing. If you have questions about the show or want to find out more about BRI, send an email to jeff@lasallest.com. Remember, this journey is all about putting wisdom over worth, principles over profit, morals over money, and integrity over it all. God bless.